This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Mariana and Pam. So Kermit's back again, holding down the fort because Barry's still over in Argentina. I did get a text from him today saying that it's the closing ceremony today.
It just goes so fast. It's such a wonderful experience.
Hopefully we might get to talk to Barry later on today. How did you think the Zelda Morris went? Man, the numbers were pretty good.
I think it went very well. I would have preferred it had stopped earlier when we were doing better. Really enjoyed it. And congratulations to the place getters. Really good. But I'm sorry, Mariana, I've got something else on my mind this morning.
What's that?
My second granddaughter arrived at 12:30. And during the tournament, I was talking to another newish grandmother. And I said, I used to go to the Bridge Club and people would show me these pictures of their grandchildren and I'd think, yeah, I'll never be like that. And there I am. I go to Bridge and I show them photos and I say, isn't she gorgeous?
Oh, yeah. Grandkids are awesome, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Congratulations. Thank you. Are you still called? Now, what did you say your name was?
Pamma.
Pamma, that's right. Yeah, well, I'm Nana Mouse. Just over the last week or so, we were talking about describing your hand, and it's quite easy when you're 5'4". But what happens if you're like 6'4"? How do we show this magic six-card suit?
Well, I'm going to give you a typical Bridge answer. I think it depends. It depends on what the six and the four are, and I think it depends how strong you are, whether you'll get another bid. All that kind of stuff. You know, if it's a six-card major, you've opened, but it's not a strong hand, I tend to rebid the six-card major. However, if you're changing suit and partner is forced to bid, you can always bid the four-card other suit and then show the six later. When you bid one suit and then another suit, you're showing nine of your cards. If you're only rebidding a suit to show six, that's only showing six of your cards. So it just depends a little bit on the strength of the hand and what the suits are. There you go. How's that for a murky answer?
Pretty murky. I agree with that.
Well, if you think that your bid is forcing, and that's one of the main agreements partnerships need to know, is whether their bids are forcing.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing like passing a forcing bid to make your partner lose the will to live. You know, you can take another bid, so you can describe that 6-4. Just depends how many bids you think you're going to get. And if you're going to be able to show the shape anyway. So if I had a 6 minor and a 4 of a major, and I had the opportunity to bid the major without reversing, then I would do that. Majors rule.
True. I was playing in a Zelda Morris. There was a couple of times when we had voids and we couldn't actually come up with a bid to say, oh, partner, I've actually got a void. And the opponents were interfering. And we were struggling with that. What is your way to counter trying to describe a void? We do not play splinters. So maybe that's something that we could introduce.
I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. I mean, voids are great when partner doesn't have values in that suit. They're a disadvantage if they do have points in the suit. So it's quite good to be able to communicate them. You know, as you say, if you don't play splinters, it's a little bit tricky. I tell you, one of my favourite conventions, it doesn't come up very often, but when it does, it's amazing, exclusion Blackwood. So have you heard of that one, Mariana?
Yes.
So you have agreed a suit and make an unnecessary jump. Double jump, and that says a key card, but don't tell me about the ace of the suit that I've bid. That's handy. It Doesn't come up very often. As I say, it feels pretty magical when it does. I guess the little bit of advice I'd give is that when partner bids a suit that you're avoiding, I always put my little handbrake on half a notch when that happens, because
Okay.
they're going to have very likely have wasted values in that suit that are no good to you. So they're counting up their points, and they might have like King Jack in the suit that you were avoiding. It's very likely to be of no use, those 4 points. I would just put my handbrake on a little bit. However, if the opponents are bidding their heads off in the suit that you have avoided, that's good news.
Yep. I remember a hand on the weekend. I was bidding hearts and partner were void in hearts. My heart holding was quite strong. I think I had a 7-card heart suit headed by the ace king. And partner ended up bidding three no trumps. And I'm looking at my hand, I'm thinking, oh. But anyway, I pulled it to four hearts, which mate, I would struggle to bid three no trumps with a void in partner's bid suit. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I'd sort of have to know that, hey, I should be a politician. I'm just like dodging these questions. Well, if nothing else, bidding three no trumps when you've strongly bid a suit warns partner that you have nothing in that suit. Even if you don't end up playing in three no trumps, partner has warned you about being void.
So I open one heart,
Now I remember this.
two
Interesting. At
diamonds.
the end, I thought, oh, we've missed six diamonds. But I see that the two people that bid six diamonds went off it, so I don't think it's easy to play.
I've got ace king holding a 7-card suit. So one heart, two diamonds, three hearts, three no trumps. I'm looking at my hand. I've got a singleton, queen of spades, ace small in clubs. And King Jack nine and diamonds. I thought my hand doesn't look like it's got enough entries, so I pulled it to four hearts.
I
And
think that's a good decision. We had a similar option. The hand I held was the one with the void, and it had ace to three spades, a void in hearts, queen to five diamonds, and king queen five clubs. And I actually chose, even though I know that I should bid two 5-card suits, I should bid the high one first. I bid two clubs on this hand because if partner happened to bid two diamonds, then I was pretty interested in slamming diamonds. But if I bid diamonds, it just uses up too much room in the option, I felt. So anyway, don't know whether that's completely right. And club suit's better than the diamond suit. But we basically had the same option. It went a heart, two clubs, three hearts, three no trumps, four hearts.
Right. Yeah, I sometimes find it very difficult to describe my hands with void. So perhaps splinter is the way to go to add another bow.
Splinters are only when you've got suit agreement,
Yeah,
and so
that won't
that's
help.
not going to help on this particular hand. So I have an 11 count, 5-5 in the minors, and a void. And so I was feeling pretty excited about this hand. When partner kept bidding my void, I just put the handbrake on.
I see. Do you think you would have liked playing this hand in three no trumps? So what are you going to get? You're going to get five clubs, two heart, a spade.
Oh, it's going to be a nightmare. You get a spade lead and you're toast. Nobody did pay it in three, no trump.
No, it was pulled. Every single hand pulled it to four hearts.
As I said, I was fairly sure six diamonds was there, and deep finesse says it is. The two people that bid well to six diamonds sadly didn't make six diamonds.
Okay, so what's happening this week for you? You're going up to the New Zealand Pairs in Auckland.
Yes, I am. I feel like I'm playing quite a lot of bridge. Well, I have, but this is will be the third weekend in a row. I'm not that keen on pairs. I think I'll go up and visit a couple of people up in Auckland. I don't like pairs when you play two boards a table and there's all this movement and noise. It just does my head in. Up at this tournament, there should be more than two boards per table, I would imagine. And hopefully not too much noise, but you know. Are you
Oh,
not playing, Mariana?
no, I'm not playing. I might be going to Pyrawn to go and see my mama. if I don't pick up a game, but Bridge sort of always wins over seeing my mama.
Oh, about
So,
your mum.
yeah, I know. Anyway, who are you playing with?
Russell Wilson. So he's from my
Very
club.
cool.
Russell and I have been friends for, I don't even want to say how long. So,
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but do you have a tip?
just stay focused. It's my biggest struggle, I have to say.
Yeah, staying in the game. Okay, my dear, thank you very much. And we'll see you at the table sometime.
You will. Thanks.
Okay.
See you.
Phenomena.
And here are the closing seconds of Peter Holland's Bridge Legends clip on Tom Arbuci. If you'd like to listen to this video clip in full, check out Peter Holland's on YouTube.
Tom Arbuci's journey to greatness is a testament to hard work, passion, and integrity. From his early days, where he was a young player fighting for every win, to becoming the coach and captain and mentor, Tom has proven time and again that greatness is not just about winning, it's about contributing to the game, protecting its integrity, and inspiring the next generation. So, thanks for joining us on this journey through the life of Tom Arbuci. A true bridge legend.
Great news coming up next. I get to talk with Barry and Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's afternoon here, but morning's good enough.
Where are you and how are you?
We're still in the apartment in Buenos Aires. It's been a rainy day in Buenos Aires. It's going to be a wet track at Flemington if it's anything like this.
Hamilton's got its famous Melbourne Cup session today. I've already had the director call me. He thinks there might be too many people for the one set of boards that we have, so we're just preparing to get a second one down.
I've got the bailiff with me as well. He's been out in the rain too.
What have you been doing in the rain?
We were hopping on and hopping off.
I don't want to know.
Buses. Buses. Up on buses. That's what we were doing.
Oh, right. You were seeing the sights.
We were, but it wasn't a great day for it.
Oh,
Yeah, but Barry
no.
didn't get to see a jockey club and a racetrack.
That was a high point.
I actually have a question for the bailiff today, too.
What have you got?
Well, you know, sometimes people sit at the table and they put their cards into a little stack and they just rest them on the table. What happens when they accidentally put it down the wrong way up and the bottom card is actually showing what happens there?
Becomes a penalty card because it wasn't intentional. If it was a 9 or below, it will be a minor penalty card. But if it's a 10 or above, it's a major penalty card, which is a much more serious rule than the minor penalty card. The difference is that if it's during the bidding, the partner has to pass at their next turn to call, which can make a big difference. And when it comes to the play, the fact that it's a major penalty card means it's going to be played at the first legal opportunity. And potentially if partner's on lead, there could be lead restrictions. Whereas that doesn't happen if it's a minor penalty card.
They don't put your cards down upside down. Is that what they mean when they talk about upside down signals?
Look, I don't know that it happens all that often, Marianne. I can't remember the last time I was called for it happening. I take it that it happened today, did it?
No, it happened a couple of weeks ago.
I guess when you've seen it happen once, you might think it's happened more often, but I don't know that it's a common occurrence.
I've got another question for him, Mariana. You
Okay.
know how sometimes when the director comes along and I don't know, somebody's explaining something and the other one doesn't know what's going on, and sometimes the director takes one of the players away from the table for a while.
Yeah.
What do they talk to them about? What happens?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you probably want to find out exactly what's going on without revealing anything about their hand to their partner. And sometimes, for some rules, you need to know what options they have for what's called a comparable bid. I'm sure you must have covered this before. If you've made an insufficient bid, you can allow your partner to bid if you can make a comparable call. And sometimes that's not so clear in somebody's system whether they've got something available that will mean something close enough. So you might want to say, well, you know, what would it mean if you bid such and such? Or while the director's trying to think whether they would allow that as being a comparable call, because that rule can sometimes be a matter of a judgment thing if the director thinks it's close enough. It doesn't have to be exactly the same. It just has to have no significant extra information. You know, sometimes like here you go, one heart and you call one diamond. If you mentor one diamond, for one thing, this particular auction, the director will be asking, what did your one diamond bit mean? If you're playing precision or something and it's artificial, two right. diamond won't mean the same thing. But presuming it's natural, play a normal one diamond thing, a two diamond overcourt probably falls into the same range. So a lot of directors would allow a two diamond bit to be substituted for the insufficient one diamond in that case. To a certain extent, sometimes the director even has to ask, what were you intending to mean? And that can sometimes be the case with an ace asking bid. Someone bids four diamonds in response to four no trumps. Well, the director might want to find out, for instance, did you think your partner was bidding four clubs and you were bidding four diamonds to show no aces? Or did you just get confused about the level and you were intending to bid five diamonds to show one ace? The director can't say things like that and have you say them with someone at the table. So the director might want to take you away from the table to have a quick chat to sort out what's going on before making a ruling.
What about if, say, opposition open one heart and then it's your turn to bid and you're thinking, oh, okay, I've got a Michaels, I've got spades and a minor, and I then go and write down one heart instead of two heart. What happens then?
Well, it is insufficient and they have a right to accept it. They do, then your partner has to try and figure out what you meant by your one heart bid. which could be tricky, right?
Yeah.
Director would also have to consider in this case whether or not an intended call would be a bit more difficult decision if you open, if it was a two heart opening and you had two hearts.
Yep.
People could play that and you might have intended three hearts to. So that part of it would be interesting for the director, exactly what was going through your mind, whether they should even allow that. But presuming it's not accepted, the director would probably let you change it to two hearts. Simply because that's what you intended to bid.
Okay.
We had an interesting insufficient bid happen during the week. We've been playing behind screens in Woods Heiress. Sometimes I don't know what happens on the other side of the screen, Mariana, I tell you. They opened one spade and Jenny overcalled one club. The person who'd opened one spade then sent the screen through. Now, normally that wouldn't be a problem because, you know, they're going to allow the one club to be corrected. We wouldn't know anything about it on our side of the screen. But because the screen had come through, and my screen mate and I both looked at this, one spade with a one club overcall. I don't know whether it was correct or not. The director came along and looked at it, and he deemed that by pushing the screen through that they had accepted the one club overcall.
Oh,
I was unaware of that, but that's according to their conditions. But lots of things happen at Bridge. There's one thing, I actually raised it up for Measle Bridge, but in one of the matches here, someone opened four diamonds and they'd forgotten that they were playing that a four diamond opener showed a strong hand with spades. And that went through the screen. Partner remembered their system and bid four spades and that came back through the screen. So they passed it out in four spades. So the contract was played in four spades down six.
They only had three spades between them, Mariana.
Yeah.
Yes, they have four diamonds and eight diamonds and two spades. So, but they have more than their partner because their partner, who had to have four spades because it was showing them good spades, they only had one spade. And they played four spades down six.
Now, so the person that opened four diamonds can't correct that?
They didn't correct it because they had still forgotten. You see, the interesting thing is when it happens at the bridge table, everyone wants to correct it like you wanted them to because they hear partner give the explanation. But you see, with the screen, they don't hear what their partner said. I've opened four diamonds and partner's bid four spades. All good, I've got two card spade support for them. So they pass. When it happens at the bridge table, then the director says, oh, no, sorry, you can't correct it because you've heard the explanation from partner and that's why you want to correct it. Mm. That's what everyone says, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
Of course I would have been five diamonds. I've got eight of them. Right? And the curious thing about this story is, although all the other matches, perfectly normal on this board, this particular Dakara went back, they'd gone six down and four spades.
Yeah.
And they gained it to him because the people they were playing had exactly the same accident with exactly the same convention. And they played four spades down seven. They came down only six was worth to him.
Hilarious.
That was a match between Spain and Switzerland.
Really?
Tax transfers. So you'd think it would be an American thing, but it's European.
Some people call it Damiers.
There is one called Damiers as well. Yeah. I think originally it was called Texas Transfers.
Okay. Right, aside from being quite funny, it's quite a good learning thing for people that if you forget and you open four diamonds with diamonds, and they ask the partner what it is, and they say it shows spades, and then they bid four spades, you really shouldn't be bidding five diamonds. Partner knows you've got a whole lot of diamonds, and they've said they want to play it in spades from your point of view.
You hearing your partner explain the bid is unauthorized information. You're not allowed to take advantage of it. The only reason the partner thinks you've got spades is because you heard him say so, not because you knew that when you opened the bid. Because when you opened the bid, you thought you were showing up.
Tell me what's been happening. I see that Patrick was playing a couple of games with Peter Newell.
Well, more than a couple, they did quite well.
Not quite as many as it seemed, because I played 12 board sets with Peter Newell before Peter went home, because we thought Peter being such a good captain that he should get to play some bridge. So we put him in the team for the transnational, which meant that Julie couldn't play, but she had some stuff to do anyway. So we thought we'd be able to put Julie in the team, back in the team later. But they said, no, you're not allowed to do that. However, they did sort of relent. They said Julie could play a couple as a substitute. But then even when she played as a substitute, they insisted that she put down Peter Newell's number. Couple of matches later, when I was actually with Julie, even though if you look at the record, it says I
It
was playing
says
with Peter
Peter.
Newell. There was 11 matches I played in the Toronto Transnationals. Nine of them were with Peter, and two of them with Julie, who was being called Peter.
I didn't actually realize they'd made Peter's number, but there you go.
So where did you end up overall?
The transnational teams, there were 4 days of qualifying, and at the end of that, the top 12 teams went into A, the next 12 teams went into B, and everybody else went into C. Well, we finished in section B, at the top of section B. We didn't do very well in section B, I can tell you. We started off being the top qualifier and ended up drifting further and further down the field. So it wasn't a happy event for us. But a funny thing happened along the way. I've got something to show you. No, it's
Oh, put it away, Barry. Put it away.
it's generally accepted that Richard Solomon is, well, how shall I put it? Miserable? Well, I'm here to debunk that story. Richard Solomon gave me some money the other day. Here it is, Mariana. I won't be able to see it obviously on Bridge Zone, but that
$20.
is a 20 peso note. So look at that, it's got an alpaca. I think that's an alpaca on the back. So he gave me this 20 peso note, and it looks so good because I actually left it in my shirt and it's been through the wash, and that's how it looks. However, I looked up the other day to see just how much it was worth on current exchange rates. 3 cents it's worth. There you go. The generosity of Solomon.
Funny, funny. After you made the knockouts, you then get picked. Now, Patrick, where on earth did this rule come from where, because you're top or the top four, you get to pick who your opponents? Why does Bridge have that ruling?
Oh, well, there should be something for finishing at the top.
What,
Don't
like
give
an
you any
advantage, you
carryovers.
mean?
They don't give you any carryover to those matches. If you're in the top four, you can get to choose. I've made the mistake. I was top qualifier on the New Zealand teams and chose a team to play in the round of 16 and then lost to them. Being given the opportunity to play who you want in the first round, that's the reward for finishing top of that qualifier.
Poland had done really well to qualify top in a strong field.
They kept doing really well because although we gave them no opposition at all and that they beat us really easily, they went on and they won the whole thing. So they were the best mixed team.
When you qualified top in pool B, did you get to pick or did it come out as a
No,
random
it
draw?
was a round robin. You got to play everyone.
In fact, it so happened that in round robin we'd beaten Poland. So we were sort of surprised they picked us. They played a lot better in that round of 16 than they did when they played us in the round robin. We were thinking, oh, that's quite good. Poland won't pick us because we beat them in the round robin. We were wrong.
Some really close final in the open women mixed and seniors. Well, the mixed was quite close for a long, long way, wasn't it?
Poland, they actually won the last set. That was more than they won against us in any one set. So there you go, it can happen.
There are a number of them that were like single digit imps separating them for most of the way. Certainly exciting for the kibitzers.
When do you leave?
I think we get home on the 12th of November. And what about you, Patrick? You're
A couple of days earlier.
They're back on the 9th. Liz and Blair are
There are an extra week.
Oh, good.
closing ceremony last night. So we did go along and watch everybody get their medals.
See some more tango?
No, there was no tango this time. To their credit, they tried to get through the medal ceremonies as quick as they could, but it really did take quite a while when they had to get all the bronze medalists up on stage, the silver medalists, and then the gold medalists, and then they had to present them with all their medals. It did take quite a while, even though they tried to rattle through it.
Play their national anthem.
And then play the national anthem for each team that won. And we all had to
Oh.
stand up each time. I heard the Turkish national anthem twice, the Polish national anthem twice, because there were a couple of some pairs events as well that day. We got to hear a lot of national anthems.
Great experience.
It was. I think the whole thing was pretty well run, really.
Good. National pairs are this coming weekend in Auckland. Field seems to be a good, strong field.
It's not as big as I thought it might be. They've got about 18, 19 tables, I think.
19.5 and a lot there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I thought they might have got a few more than that. Still pretty good.
Any famous last words from Buenos Aires? Oh, and people commented about the audio that we provided them. They said it was really good to hear what was happening. They all said that you sounded excited, Barry.
We were excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty pleased with making the top 16. That was the first aim. Yes.
Not unusual for Barry being excited. We normally just have to wake him up to get anything out of him.
Well, say hello and goodbye to Argentina from us, and hope you have a fantastic
There's some
time.
rumors floating around. They're unsubstantiated and they may not happen, that the event may come back to Buenos Aires in 2027, but probably not.
Where is it next year?
Place called Herning, is it, or?
Denmark, that's right. Okay, well, ka kite and catch you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye for now.
Here is a quick rundown of what happened at the champs. So the winners of the mixed were Poland, second was China, and the seniors, USA and India coming second. In the women's event, Turkey was the winner there over Sweden. In the open, Poland beat Italy for the gold. And in the transnational, there was a group of Americans that took out the gold. Second place was Perubuono, which was our very own Matt Brown, Michael Whibley, and they were playing with James Coutts and Liam Miller of Australia. A great result for these four. Well, that's all for this week. Happy bridging, everybody, and I'll catch you next week.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.